no doubt. This is dedicated to my man, Big Five, Big Trev. Real's in the place to be. I'm coming to get you out, kid. And we out, no doubt.
Another mood scale. I know I'm going to be bad to try to guess the number. I would say 18, but I don't really know. Hey, sweet. Coming from the undisclosed location, morning session this time because of the nice President's Day week. So hopefully I can break away from my drab and lackluster performances of late. But I feel pretty energized to do it, especially coming off of
you remember that one Reggie Jackson commercial where he's just like mumbling along and just talking about all that stuff, like, you know, fine gray hair, and, you know, you've been doing that for a little bit, but you look different. You look refreshed, man.
Well, it's not 11 o'clock at night, so I'm here. I'm awake.
I'm feeling your age, huh? Can't stay up late at night, man. We used to. We 11 o'clock. We just get started, man. What's going on?
Well, it might have something to do with the 6 beers I drank before I came over.
Well, see, that's a problem, right there.
That's a problem. Yeah, I'm exaggerating. It's more like 4. But yeah, Elimination Chamber is what we're coming off of, and a really good Raw. The Raw that, you know, coming off Elimination Chamber is on the downhill path towards Mania, and a lot of stuff happened. A lot of stuff that, you know, we've kind of been advocating for some months, and it came to fruition here. So let's see, some things that happened.
It was the first good stop. The first good stop in WrestleMania. You know, we're talking about the stops of WrestleMania. This is like the third stop. It was the first good one. And I think, you know, the past couple move skills that we've done, it's kind of been a really, really negative, which is kind of things that we didn't understand. Not so much that people are getting put in spots that they're being put in, maybe a small part. But in terms of storytelling and the storytelling that they're building up to, and we're always looking to want new stars to be created and new storylines to go, and it seemed like Elimination Chamber was, from everything they're doing 2 weeks before, seemed like it was going to be just straight face wins and no lack of development. But this was a good Elimination Chamber, man, so go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one thing we have been frustrated with is the amount of just babyface, just squash matches on heels that should be getting built up. And this is one of the first times in a while where, you know, the heels really came through strong and made some statements that can be built off and start the build towards WrestleMania. The other thing, too, is, you know, I think we've been a little concerned just because if you look at a lot of the ways these storylines were going, it seemed like they were just being made up on the fly and going back and forth on. And especially with the Shield, you know, that was this concern we had. You know, they have all this momentum going. We knew what the right thing for the business and for an entertaining show heading towards Mania was. But did the WWE creative really have the stones to follow through with that? And I was really proud that they did, and they even backed it up again on Raw last night with two clean wins in a row against some of the biggest baby faces WWE has.
Well, we're definitely going to get into the Shield and kind of talk a little bit more in depth. I just wanted to bring up two things real fast. I'm going to need to talk about it, but the two things about Elimination Chamber I really liked was Swagger, of course, winning. And I knew there was kind of a little bit of backlash because everybody's saying, like, oh, Swagger's winning, and Alberto Del Rio, Swagger's not going to be a good match. And it's just kind of the whole thing of, like, shut up, man. You know, here's the thing about what I liked about the whole Swagger. One was that there's about three or four guys that had a legitimate chance of winning as compared to, say, having a, well, not maybe three guys. I think there's two legitimate guys there. There's Mark Henry, who our producer Jason, you know, he ordered Elimination Chamber and he said that he was just a beast in it. You know, Mark Henry was just going nuts with it, rightfully so. And I think the other guy that we kind of thought was going to be probably the one that was going to win, but we didn't want to win, was going to be Randy Orton. So it's kind of funny just having two guys, and you kind of had wild cards in there. You know, like we knew Y2J wasn't going to win. We knew Daniel Bryan was going to win. We knew Kane was going to be legitimate. But any of those guys had a slight chance of winning, and the wild card was kind of Swagger just because of the hype he was getting the three shows before that. But I just thought it was really good where there wasn't any really clean, dominant guy. I think Swagger was a big wild card where you could really sit there and say, well, Swagger could win. And the funny thing was that there was two storylines in place. One, you had Swagger. One, you had Mark Henry. You know, if those two guys won, you had two storylines in place. Mm-hmm. The one that didn't have a storyline in place was Randy Orton. Mm-hmm. All a kind of a Divas match, you know, that nobody really knows what the storyline is. It would just be a match. And I found it refreshing and kind of funny at the same time that the two guys that really made the impact in that Elimination Chamber were Henry and Swagger. And both of them had legitimate storylines that they could win either way. And when Swagger won, it's like, okay, yeah, so we're going to go this route with the storyline. And we'll get into that later on because I know you got this big thing, you know, rolled up your sleeve. You're all ready to go with it. But, yeah, let's talk about the Shield. It's funny. My brother was updating me on Twitter just kind of talking about matches. And then so he was talking about the Shield match. And then he talked about the next match. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, who won the match? He's like, well, Shield won. And I was sitting there going, you should probably tell me that first. Yeah. You know, I was like,
you don't want to spend time on that one?
Because the whole day was like, you know, Thursday was coming around, Friday was coming around, Saturday was coming around. And doing this podcast and stuff has kind of got me back into wrestling. But I'm really sitting there going, like, Thursday, you know, just sitting down going, like, man, if the Shield don't win, man, it's like, this is going to be crap wrestling I'm going to have to watch for another 3-4 months. And I probably will get to the point where I'm not going to watch as intent as I was. Like, I'll pass through it and kind of keep up on it because I have to. But, like, man, it's like, it's not going to be a lot of fun to do that. So when the Shield won, first of all, I marked out like crazy because I knew they should have won. I didn't feel that they were. I just couldn't see them doing it. And WWE's reason behind it is things are changing. And a lot of things is they're looking at these three guys and people I'm talking about on Twitter sphere, everywhere at WWE Active, they're looking at these three guys of the Shield. And they're creating stars. Dean Ambrose was the one guy when Shield first came out, and I said this before, but Dean Ambrose was the one that everybody knew. Yeah. Kind of the internet smarks and stuff. They're the ones that you knew. You know, we had Seth Rollins over here, and we had Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns really stepped up during the meantime, and kind of what I'm hearing from everybody else, and especially from the match on Raw, they made a start out of Seth Rollins, too. Seth Rollins is just a great bump guy, can deliver and that flying knee he did to Jericho, granted it was Jericho, yeah. And Jericho can still no end, but that was a great thing to see. And it's good to see, you know, people are starting to be buzzing about Roman Reigns on the internet, you know, saying like, this is the next big thing. Coming from a heel, a guy that's a heel, I just think the thing they're doing now, I'm happy now. For the first time, I'm excited, and this time I mean it. I'm not pretending to be John Laurinaitis or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I started to get a pretty good sense as they rolled towards Elimination Chamber that Shield was going to win. Like I was kind of getting that feeling. Just it seemed like everybody knew this was the right thing. The thing that completely shocked me.
Now are you? And I'll let you get. But are you? Because I kind of felt the same way, but I was afraid at the same time. I mean, are you as big of a mark as I am for the Shield as you are for Ziggler?
Okay. I'd say so. I mean, those are two of the best things going. It's hard for me to say, like, completely with the Shield just because I have not seen them wrestle until last night, right? Ziggler, his ring work speaks for itself, and that's what really makes me a big mark for Ziggler is the guy is pretty much, next to CM Punk, he's pretty much the best guy going in the ring. So with Shield, the build-up was great. The way they've been doing things is great. But, you know, and everything I hear, you know, it sounds like all these guys are legitimate in the ring. But I still wanted to see it, right? And I finally starting to get to see, like, a little bit of what they can do as actual in-ring talents. And that's the thing that's now kind of got it going. You know, it's like we talked about a month or so ago. We had this debate on the Shield. Should they start wrestling or are they better off doing run-ins? And I was itching to see him wrestle. But you kind of convinced me to your side only in the sense that you thought if they started wrestling, they were just going to lose, right? And then I kind of came to your side. But if this is what's going to happen, they're going to put him in the ring and they're going to be able to win, then that's the game changer right there.
So what was surprising, before I cut you off?
Yeah,
what was
that they won clean. You know, I thought that the change from making it a chamber match to a 6-man straight-up tag match was like going to be their loophole to figure out a way that they could cheat to win, right? Whether it's going to be Lesnar doing a run-in, Paul Heyman, CM Punk, Brad Maddox, something, right? Even what you were talking about last week, maybe with The Undertaker. But taking them out of the chamber made it a lot easier for a run-in, and I was going to be fine with that. I mean, if they won by dirty tactics, you know, no problem with that, right? But I figured that's what they were going to do to protect the Super Friends, right? But for them to be able to go out and have them win the match clean with no cheat, that completely floored me. I didn't see that one coming at all.
But even speaking about the match on Raw, I was, when we were talking about the whole thing of the Shield wrestling in the ring and everything that comes with that, I was totally on board with any type of interference that you can get. Any type of interference you can get, any cheating you can get, as long as they win, I don't care. As long as they play the heel and they do that, I don't care.
Right.
This whole thing of them winning two clean matches in a row with big name guys and big game performers, and even just kind of the way that they win, they're not overpowering. You know, when you have a heel and he's over, say like Mark Henry, and he's overpowering, it's like, okay, this heel's overpowering, he's going to get his somewhere down the line. They're really toeing the line. You can't really place them in any way. The only way that you can really place them is, and this is funny, if you're going to categorize the Shield, all three are good on the mic. All three are good in the ring. And all three, as a cohesive unit, they work really well.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that in a long time. And bringing in that new wrinkle of bringing a team that doesn't back down, you know, they're going to run away, you know, this, that, and this. But they can play any type of role within that structure, and it's exciting. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. You know, with Jericho talking about NWO and talking about the Nexus now, there's no way that the Nexus is in league with NWO. And I wouldn't put the Shield with the NWO either, just because the NWO had three guys that were had storied careers and stuff.
Right.
But when the NWO first came out, and I talked about this before too, even with, if they're like an outsiders type group where they overpower and they can take on the top faces and not back down with what they're trying to do, to me that moves the storyline along a lot. It'll be interesting to see. When I was watching the Raw match, you know, there's points and times where you're looking, it's like, okay, you know, maybe they'll lose right here. And I'm sitting there going, well, what does it mean if they lose? Again, you know, there's not enough background to really kind of feel like, well, if they lose this time, we'll be okay. Mm-hmm. But I was saying, well, if they lose on Raw, anything that they gained on the pay-per-view is just going to be gone.
Lose all their momentum, right?
But at the same time, you kind of knew that in Raw, you kind of knew they were going to win.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to do when you put Jericho in the match because, you know Jericho.
Because you know Jericho will lose any matches.
Yeah, and, you know, I love Jericho.
Might as well put Ziggler in that match too, right?
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, it makes it an easy out, put it that way. That the thing that made it harder to predict the Chamber was there was no easy out, right? You know Cena's not going to go down. Sheamus is built pretty close to the level of John Cena, and Ryback, it seems that they're trying to put him up in that class as well, though perhaps not, because he's been dominating on TV in general. I guess he's got something like 5 pay-per-view streak loss going right now.
And he's the one that lost the match in the Elimination Chamber, and then in
right.
the Raw match, he's on the ground. I don't know why he was on the ground hurting so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But he was on the ground writhing around.
Last night?
Yeah, last night.
Roman Reigns?
Did Roman Reigns do something on the outside?
He speared him.
He speared him after, speared him for his finishing move.
Right.
But I don't see a spear laying the guy out for 5 minutes like it did. But yeah, but either way.
Yeah. Reigns is, you know, talking about the way the performance is. Reigns is the guy that really, as good as the other guys are, Seth Rollins and Ambrose, Reigns brings that legitimacy because, you know, if it was three small guys going against those three big stars, you know, it would be really tough to be believable. And Roman Reigns in last night's match, he took a beating. Like he did a really good job. He was going after him, never backed down. He'd go and get hurt and tag out. I really liked the way they used, like, a lot of double tags. I don't know if you noticed that. It was like Reigns would tag someone in, and then as soon as Ambrose came in, he would tag Rollins, and then they come out with these triple teams, which I haven't seen cohesion like that on a tag team in a while.
I think a lot of that has to do with them being in NXT, just kind of with the older guys that are running NXT and just the storytelling that's there.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things that really pointed that I really liked about that Raw match was the first time Roman Reigns came in, it was against Sheamus. And Reigns comes in the ring, and I'm not going to say that anything grand happened, but when you watch wrestling for so long, the way Reigns came in and Reigns is able to step into the mat, step into the ring, stand up tall, and he's looking at Sheamus,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, okay, we got to fight here.
Yeah.
You know, there's a thing where you're saying, well, Sheamus will probably get the upper hand in the fight, mm-hmm. but when Reigns first walks in the ring, you know, say if it was Dean Ambrose against Sheamus, mm-hmm. it's like, well, Sheamus is going to, you know, there's no way that if there's a punch fight, Sheamus, you know, Dean Ambrose is going to get the better of Sheamus.
Right.
It's kind of, you have these two big guys, and what I can kind of compare it to is when you had, say, like The Rock versus Stone Cold, two evenly matched guys, mid-sized guys, they get in a punch fight. It's kind of back and forth. You don't know what's going on. Even with, like, Mankind versus The Rock.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I say that is because I've been watching it for, you know, I watched it last week, but just the whole punching element. You know, you didn't really have that in the WWE where you just have straight punches going back and forth and then one guy overcomes because one guy was always bigger than the other guy. Mm-hmm. I really like that aspect of it, just that small little aspect of it. The other thing that I really liked, too, was when they had Ryback down and Seth Rollins is kicking him and doing all this stuff and everything. Like you said, he tags Dean Ambrose. Ambrose does the same thing and all this stuff. And then you tag in Roman Reigns. Reigns does it, and there's probably another tag in there. And they couldn't keep Ryback down. And to me, that's what I really like that aspect of it, because Ryback is so big. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that Ryback, anything that he gets is undeserved, because the guy's huge. But it was legitimate. Like, these guys are just pounding away on him. He's still coming up. I just thought, it's just a small spot, and it's nothing great, but it's just storytelling where, even though the Shield was doing everything it could, you still had, like, a really overpowering guy, and they did it the right way. They didn't have him overpowering where he's just getting up after everything. It's like, they have him down, but you know it's not big enough for him to go down. Right. Then he gets a second win, and then that his comeback is a lot more believable.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I think, and we said this before with some of the different types of matches that they put Ryback in, I think the more often you put him into, like, a six-man tag match, you can kind of hide his flaws, hide that he probably doesn't have the greatest wind. It makes the stuff that he does look better, right? Like there's, you know, he's not a complete waste, right? But we harp on him a lot because of the spot he's in and the abilities that he has. But, like, you know, can't talk, and he's gotten a lot better in terms of botching stuff, right? He's gotten a lot better with his moves. But
he's gotten a lot better at botching things or not botching things?
Not botching, okay. Right? I see him able to pull off his moves a lot more cleanly now. But, you know, the more you have a six-man match with the Shield or with these other guys around, you can hide the flaws a little better, and it looks a little better for Ryback. So, I mean, I think they're starting to use him the right way.
Yeah, when you just said the six-man tag thing, six-man tag wrestling was big in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Even to the point where you had six-man tag belts. Mm-hmm. When we had your G.I. Joe guys, you know, we made the belts and stuff, we had the six-man tag, you know, stuff, and we put a lot of thought into it. But if you're going to have matches like that, and the funny thing about the whole thing is that the Shield, to me, they're the ones that really are the ones that are dictating that match.
Mm-hmm.
You had the three baby faces. You have a guy like Jericho. You know, Jericho's doing the job. He's going to be off TV for a while. I think this was his last one, his last Raw, and then he's going to be off TV because there's a
concert.
Fozzy's doing their thing. So he was kind of being the ringleader, telling the crowd to get into it, and that was fine. But it's nice to see, not only do you see the team, you know, it's the same thing like you see Ziggler versus John Cena. Ziggler's doing all the work. Ziggler's doing everything is there and everything. And then you have John Cena be the ring general. Mm-hmm. And he actually did an Elimination Chamber again, too, where he's telling Roman Reigns to do something in the middle of the ring. So there's this respect or pecking order where Cena's at the top, but he really doesn't deserve it. Mm-hmm. And the match is being made not because of the three guys that are faces, but it's because it's three guys that work really well together. And the more that they work well together, I think it's better if we're going to see more six-man tag matches. Because every six-man tag match we've seen has been three really independent guys that have their own heat, you know, have their own fan base, and they try to work as a unit, and it doesn't work. It's like a glorified tag team match, which WWE's known for not having, mm-hmm. seeing how they got rid of their best tag team. But you have three guys in the Shield that really work well together, and I can watch that all day long. And if that translates to the faces doing that too, even better, because there's a place for six-man tag wrestling.
Well, and I think the other thing that's good too is JBL's really selling it, right? And he's maybe he's overselling in some ways, but he's really selling, like, I've never seen a three-man group work this well together. Saw someone, I think it might have been Arda or Cal or somebody online, but after JBL made that comment, he's like, I think he tweeted out that Michael P.S. Hayes might have something to say about that, which I thought was pretty funny. But nonetheless, I mean, they work really well together, and the fact that you can now have a team winning on, like, cohesion and team unity over three individuals, like, that's, like, that little edge that puts it over that makes it even more legitimate.
And you have a chance, even though I don't want to see it, you have a chance to build three really big-time stars. And I don't want to get to the point of saying, you know, maybe that's something for 6 months down the line, mm-hmm. you know, where we go, well, who's ready to step out of the Shield and become a major star? Mm-hmm. The funny thing is you can say that about any three of those guys. I really like Seth Rollins. I think Seth Rollins' work over the past two nights has really established him as a straight worker, something that is needed, but when you give them some power to that, because we have workers in Cody Rhodes, we have workers in Damian Sandow, mm-hmm. but they're always losing. You know, you have three really good workers that are, well, I mean, I'd probably say you have two really good workers. I think Roman Reigns can be a very great worker. I mean, it's kind of funny we're not giving him as much credit because the guy's just a beast, but hell, I'll put him as a third good worker too. You have three good workers being put in a spot where they're the top heels so far, and they're unbeatable, and I would like to see this for another 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. So is that what you see? How do you see this going down the line towards Mania?
I am so excited right now. I really don't care. You know, I mean, to the point where if they win a match, lose a match, that's fine. The main thing that with me is that they beat Cena, and the funny thing that I think about the whole thing with what WWE did was, all of a sudden, Cena wasn't in that match. You know, yeah. Cena wasn't. There's nothing to talk about that match. Let's go push him onto Mania now and have him be the focal point of Mania. But it's like, dude, you got beat. You know, mm-hmm. you know, take your lumps. We're not going to throw you out there again with the. You know, I'm glad we didn't see John Cena versus the Shield and have him kick out of everything.
Yeah.
You know, 3-1, and he still wins. But right. all of a sudden, Cena's not in that picture anymore. You know, because he has to do his other business. Right now, it's as long. I'm always the guy that says, "Look, as long as anybody watching the match, and I'm talking about the fans, talking about us, talking about the powers that be, if they see, like say, like a guy like Damian Sandow, they see a guy like Cody Rhodes, and they're saying, okay, this guy put on a great match, even though he lost, this guy's a great worker. If we can do that, I would be very happy." Now, if we can do that where you come away from the Shield, this is kind of taking the whole Tully Blanchard idea. If you could walk away watching the Shield in person or on TV saying, like, hey, they had a great match, or, you know, this is the reason why I'm watching, or this is one of the reasons why I'm watching, and they delivered. You know, one thing that Jason did say was that, you know, the top three matches of the card of Elimination Chamber, well worth the price. Well, he paid, like, what, $60 for that? But him watching the Shield win, him watching CM Punk, and him watching Elimination Chamber, those three matches right there, my money's worth it, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm totally fine with that. That's what you want to do. And look at who won. Swagger won. The Shield won. The Rock won. 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yeah.
But Swagger's legit. The Shield's legit. Now, if you have two guys that are not legit winning, well, that's going to translate also. Mm-hmm. So the only thing is you're asking me, where do I want to be? I want people to come away watching the Shield saying, these guys are really good. I'm getting my money's worth when I watch them. When I watch them for 3 hours on TV, it's time well spent. And if they can win 75% of the matches, even better.
Okay, so, okay. No, that's good. More trying to see what you think, you know, how it's going to develop now, right, coming down the line. Just projecting a little bit, because, like you said, I mean, Cena's out of the picture, right? Cena's onto his match. And then, you know, so that leaves basically Sheamus and Ryback, right? Do you think this is like some... I don't really see the Shield having some long, drawn-out thing with just Sheamus and Ryback, right? So what happens next with the Shield? Where do they go? That's kind of what I'm asking.
Well, I don't think there's going to be... There's not going to be anything of someone else is going to join the Shield here, someone else is going to join the Shield there. The only thing I can really see it going is that they're going to, if I'm going to project anything, is that they're going to keep on kicking everybody's asses until WrestleMania. When Cena wins WrestleMania, I think the Dangerous Alliance is going to pop up. I think Brock is going to come into play. I think the Shield is going to come into play. I think CM Punk is going to come into play. And I think Brian Maddox is going to come into play too. So if you're going to go against John Cena in that type of way, then you have six people against John Cena. And that can probably go out for another 2-3 months. Mm-hmm. Whenever you have that large group of people, you're going to have dissension. You know, with all those alphas in a 6-man group, there's going to be dissension. So maybe that's when they start breaking up, and we'll see where it goes. Mm-hmm. There just isn't anything for the Shield to hang their hat on, except for going against the big faces, and you can't squash the big faces all the time. And plus, there's no type of faces where they can do that over an extended period of time. And it's not like they can go and get a tag belt and win a tag belt, because I think the tag team division is just it's just bad right now.
Yeah.
Especially with R-Truth coming back with Kofi, and you know, it's not worth them going to anything. They have to align themselves with the champion. The only good faction that WWE has had is the corporate is the corporation. When you had The Rock with the belt and all these guys around him, mm-hmm. and that didn't last that long either. WWE's not good at making factions. They're not good at extending factions. I see this faction as being up there with, say, you know, I see them being up there. I wouldn't say they're up there with the Four Horsemen or NWO. I wouldn't put them up there yet,
yeah.
but they're definitely second tier. The Fabulous Freebirds, you know, they're there with the Fabulous Freebirds. They're there with the Dungeon, you know, or the Dungeon of Doom, and they're there with Humperdinck Stable, you know, whatever it is.
Humperdinck Stable, is that the official name?
Yeah, Humperdinck Stable. I don't know what it's called, but so somewhere, Bam Bam's doing cartwheels in his grave, man. So yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely can see them. I mean, the only other really big time guys out there really are Team Hell No. One thing that really surprised me with the Chamber was that there was no kind of implosion between the two of them, right? That was kind of something that was speculated, because, you know, I think a lot of people think that they're building towards those guys going against each other at Mania, right? And if that was going to happen, you would think it would have started at Elimination Chamber, which it didn't. So they're also, you know, there is some old heat with Shield and Team Hell No also. So if none of those guys are available for matches, I mean, I think that's probably the one thing that I'm guessing Shield would build towards. I mean, I think it'd be really interesting. You got Ambrose and Rollins, who, you know, made their bones on the independent circuit, just like Daniel Bryan did, and then you got a guy in Reigns who can actually go toe to toe with a guy like Kane. So, I mean, I think that would be a pretty interesting program, especially considering those whole teams don't really have much direction.
Has the Shield had a problem with Miz? Because they've come out with the...
I think they attacked him one time.
So there we go. So, hey, so this is what happens. Total fanboy's dream. They win... Two of the guys wins the tag team championship when the Miz beats Cesaro with his patented figure four for the
U.S.
title. Then you have one of the guys win the U.S. title.
You,
and there we go.
You think Miz is going to get that belt?
I don't care, man. The only reason why I care is because I think what they're doing with Cesaro, making them job to this guy. I thought that match at Raw was a big time joke. There were some nice spots in there. Don't get me wrong, but it's all Cesaro was doing. And come on, man. It's like, I don't know why they're trying to give a figure four, especially to tap out to a figure four like that. The figure four hurts, you know. I can put it on you, you can put it on me, the thing hurts, but there's no power behind it with wrestling, and you can't develop the figure four as your finisher if you're not working on that leg. And the days of Ric Flair spending 45 minutes working on a guy's leg, which was great TV back then,
yeah,
doesn't translate to this era of wrestling.
Yeah, and especially when only 2 weeks ago Miz couldn't even do a figure four.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I don't know how you can't do a figure four. That's like the first move you learn. There's two submissions that... Well, there's three of them. There's three submissions that every kid does. And it's always going to be these three. Bear hug, because that's very easy to do. Boston crab is very easy to do. And then... And if you're watching someone do a bear hug, you're watching someone do a Boston crab, you're going to see Ric Flair somewhere doing a figure four.
Yeah.
That is the first four that you learn. I remember us doing, like, you should do it this way, and then, like, we picked it up, like, in 2 seconds.
Yeah, right? Yeah. No, that was pretty sad to botch that, especially when you're allegedly going for your big push to be the next player.
And Cesaro has to sell it, right? Oh, no!
Yeah.
It's the same in his five different languages and stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, I definitely could see it going down that way. I could definitely also see them doing a Freebird Rule tag team type deal, have them tag team champions and Freebird Rule it. I think that would be big. I think it would be fresh, because, you know, you got to be as old as us to remember the Freebird Rule. So there's like a whole generation and a half that has never seen that.
Well, the only problem with that, though, is that there's nobody in the tag team division where it makes that interesting. There's no face team in the tag team division that will make the Shield. I mean, if the Shield goes and wins the tag team belts, mm-hmm. they're going to be put to secondary status right away. I mean, look at what happened on Raw. You know, Kofi Kingston and R-Truth, they're going to be a tag team again, mm-hmm. because they're like, Kofi, we'll give you the Intercontinental Championship, And right when he was starting to make a name for himself, I mean, Kofi's fine, but him as a champion made a lot of sense to me. Because he could face good, you know, he could give good matches to mid-card guys, build them up, he could still win. I had no problem with that. Mm-hmm. So at the point where I was finally, like, sitting down, you know, I was in the cockpit ready to drive off into that, they give the belt to our boy, which was fine. And I had no problem with it, but at the time I was like, well, I can finally watch Kofi now. I can finally be okay watching this match because I know what he's doing, and I think it's a good role for him. If they're going to put him back in the tag team, especially when you take out Team Road Scholars, and they're talking about Titus break, you know, it sounds like Titus will probably break up with Darren Young. You really don't have a lot of people there, you know, with Sin Cara and No Show Mysterio being there.
What, Tensai and Brodus, baby?
Tensai and Brodus, that's fine. I have no problem with Tensai and Brodus being tag team champions. I really don't.
Yeah.
Because I know they're going to be mid-card. I don't want to see the Shield go to...
So you think what you're saying is that the tag team belt is a step back from where the Shield's at right now. Is that what you're saying?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't you do this? Put the IC belt on Ambrose, put the US belt on Seth Rollins, and put a... Or actually, no, Ambrose, put the World Heavyweight Championship on Ambrose, put, you know, IC on Seth Rollins, put the US on Roman Reigns. And do that. I'd rather see that.
Yeah, no, that would be fantastic.
That'd mean something. Yeah.
Yes.
So go ahead. Let's hear your professional segue because you're feeling it today, man. I'm going to do some positive reinforcement.
I'm feeling good about that.
Feeling good.
Feeling as good as maybe Jack was feeling after he
look at that.
won a big match. Which
I am over fucking whelmed right now, dude.
You applied that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So Swagger came through big. You know, we kind of touched on it early. You were talking about how there was only a couple of guys that could win it. I didn't really think Orton was going to win the match. There really is no direction to his storyline. He's really spinning his wheels. Last day or so before the match happened, I started getting a feeling that Jericho could win, but I knew it was just going to be contingent on if Ziggler cashed in, because I really saw like the possibility that Ziggler was going to cash in on Del Rio right after like a hard fought match with Big Show, and then that was my cue. If Ziggler cashed in, then I was like 100% that Jericho was going to win that chamber match. Obviously, that didn't happen, so it didn't surprise me that Jericho ended up not winning. But it led to something good with Swagger. Again, we've had this fear, and we've seen it happen over the last couple of months of starting storylines that look like they're building and end up not going anywhere. So it's good to see this come to fruition with Jack actually winning a big match, which, you know, he hasn't, even though he's been on the streak, I don't know that he's beaten anybody that's like really, really big time, right? So him going over, and even though he kind of like snuck in and rolled up Randy Orton, I mean, he pinned Randy Orton. And, you know, I think two people have pinned Randy Orton clean in the past 6 months, and that was Wade Barrett, one out of like 50 matches,
and Mark Henry. And his steroid test, right?
Okay, three then.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
That wasn't a pin. That was a tap out.
Okay, but very good. That's very good. Let's see what happens. You don't drink four beers before you come in. You can actually come back and forth.
Yeah, I only had two for breakfast. So. Yeah. So Swagger won. You know, you could see. You know, we kind of questioned last week the whole Zeb culture kind of like anti-immigrant thing.
I'm really happy with that. I'm really happy with that angle, and I'll let you get to yours. Yeah. But I'm really, you know, why I'm happy with that angle is because whenever he gets on the mic or whenever they're doing a promo, I can pass forward it. But other than that, yeah. But go ahead. I mean, I'm being dead serious.
Yeah. No, I understand. I know you're serious about that one. I've come around a little bit on it, just because I watched it a little bit more closely, and Culture does a pretty good job of being vague about his insults, right? There is no one specific group that he's coming out and saying, like, you know, if he's coming out and saying, oh, let's get all these Mexicans out of here, you know, that would not be cool, right? That would be a little over the top. But he does a pretty good job of placing it so you know what he's talking about, but he's not directly saying it. And in that case, like, I don't think it's as terrible as it felt at first. So
as compared to, say, like, when Sergeant Slaughter came out and said, down with USA, or anything... Even the problems that they've had with Asim Assad, or whatever that guy's name was, way back when, of just kind of the whole Middle Eastern hate that they had.
Right.
He does a good job. You're right.
Yeah. So in that sense, like, I come around a little bit on it. thought it was one of the interesting tweets I saw that, and I don't know if this is like, you know, I'm going to assume this is a kayfabe, but Lillian Garcia tweeted about how it offended her as a Latina, what Zeb Coulter was saying, which I'm going to assume that's a work, but I think that that's actually a good work. Because, I mean, Lillian Garcia, you know, she never gets involved in anything.
Well,
it brings more legitimate heat.
But here's the thing with her saying that is it could be a work, but at the same time, it still is offensive. It's offensive to me. I'm not going to say that it isn't.
Yeah.
I get tired. I've heard it. I have heard it all my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to sit here and say, oh, WWE is doing me wrong. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason why I fast-forward it is, one, because I can get done with the 3 hours faster. But if, let's just say, like, my wife, you know, she fell asleep on the couch, and I was watching it during one of those promos they were doing, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for me as a wrestling fan to hear that. You know, and me watching wrestling, it's, I know what they're doing. I know what they're trying to do the exact same way that you are. You know, we're sitting there saying, well, it's not as bad. You're right, it's not as bad. But as a wrestling fan, anybody kind of just coming on and watching it, it's embarrassing to me. It's not only as embarrassing to me as a wrestling fan, but it's also embarrassing to me as a Latino person. And there's a small part, you know, I can sit here and say, well, I understand what's going on, but at the very base level, he's doing his job. Mm-hmm. He's doing his job of offending me. Now, I can look at it and say, well, I know what they're doing. I know what the storyline is. Do I have a problem with it? I don't have a problem with it, but the thing that I have a problem with is I shouldn't even be thinking about it in the first place. Mm-hmm. Wrestling's not for me to think about that. You know, and I don't like what it kind of, the questions that I ask within myself or whatever it is. So mm-hmm. it's kind of funny. I think if we could ask Lillian Garcia the same way, I mean, if she was over here, I wouldn't be talking to her in the podcast. You know, I'd be doing something else. But, you know, but if she was, you know,
Checking out the pipes,
yeah. Well, how good they feel with water. I mean, anyway, so, but if we were able to ask her, I bet you she'd probably say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, it was work, but at the same time, yeah. You know, it's sad that we have to go back. We always have to go back to a racist angle in wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily want to dwell on that as much as the fact that...
But at the same time, here's the thing, but at the same time, it's out there. You know what I mean? That's the other thing, too, is that it's out there in the U.S. and everything like that.
It's topical.
And to just say, like, oh, this is totally racist, this, that, and this, I think that defeats the purpose, too. I think we need to hit the thing head on. It's just that WWE's not doing that. You know, they're doing it to build some heat. And I think you're going to have... The worst thing about the whole thing is that Swagger versus Del Rio is going to be a good match.
Yeah.
You don't need to have that whole angle of it. It'll add to some of it, but I think if you're looking at it just as a straight wrestling, you know, purist, two guys in the ring, I think both these guys are great, and they prove it week in and week out. You don't need that whole other dynamic to it.
Yeah. I just think it's just interesting because, even there's a lot of people that just, they don't even think Swagger's good. Right, and this is, you know, kind of funny to me, but people, you know, it's the people that just follow along with whatever. I mean, Swagger can get it done in the ring, but there's a pretty large percentage of people that think Swagger sucks.
Well, he's like the second best wrestler in his state or something like that, right? I mean,
well, I think what they said, he had like the most ever career pins
behind Dan Gable or something like that, or
Dan Gable's from Iowa.
Iowa, okay, yeah. Well, but who was the other guy? There's another guy.
I don't know. Yeah, but yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think there's any to me. You could question whether...
Did you ask your dad if Swagger was better than Dan Gable?
Yeah,
I did. He's no Dan Gable.
He said Zeb Coulter could take Dan Gable. But like, it gets... They needed to do something to get more heat on Jack Swagger, I think. Was this extreme? Yeah, you know, could probably say that it is. Okay, but, like, for people like us, we just like Swagger being involved in an angle. Okay, but for the average wrestling fan, they just think Swagger is not good. Okay, and I don't, you know, you can debate on how good he is on the mic. He's not great on the mic. But this is going to allow more people to dislike Jack Swagger, because I think people have forgotten about Jack Swagger, right? And in that sense, I think it does help to build to this match. People, and I think also anyone that's on the fence about Del Rio, I think it is going to further them to support Del Rio, right? Because what Swagger is, well, not necessarily Swagger saying it, but what the culture saying is kind of offensive.
Well, it's funny what they're doing with Del Rio, and I think you're exactly right. There's a lot of things that Del Rio is doing right now that I do not like. Mm-hmm. Now, his matches are great. I don't like the whole thing that he does when he panders to the crowd and he starts hitting his arm and stuff. He doesn't need that. He's so good. To me, that takes away time from him to actually do other great things that he does in the ring.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree with you that if Coulter builds... The problem that I have with Zeb Coulter is that he's great at ringside. He's very good at ringside. You know, he doesn't do any of the heel stuff that he does, but you know the opportunities there. I think he's a great ringside guy. The direct opposite of, say, Ricardo Rodriguez. I think Ricardo Rodriguez is a great ringside guy. I mean, I think right now Ricardo Rodriguez is the best ringside guy in the business because he's so involved with everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and his role has changed as kind of like he had to be very animated for people to boo him and stuff. And now they're kind of cheering because now he's the cheerleader.
Yeah.
Zeb Coulter is the direct opposite. Mm-hmm. I like it. I think I like Zeb Coulter at ringside. I think he does very well. It's just when he opens his mouth when I'm kind of like, oh, well, you know.
Right.
But before we start, I mean, we can sit here and talk about swag and do all this stuff and everything, but there's one thing that you kind of want to bring out. And I haven't even heard it yet, but I know what the topic is. I know what the topic is.
Yes.
But I want you to go ahead and do what you want to do.
Yeah, so, I don't know, depending on, like, who you follow on Twitter, who you look at, there's a guy who does a pretty good job. He's out of the UK. His name's George, and he writes for Single Leg Takedown is the blog. I mean, the blog is nodq.com, but, like, his personal one is... SLDT.
So nodq.com.
Okay. Right. So that would be the website, but on his Twitter handle it's like SLDT Single Leg Takedown. And so he kind of posed a question just put it out there. Anyone that had a question to throw it out there, and he was going to write something about it. So I posed this question to him regarding this yesterday. So I said, you know, now that Swagger has won the Elimination Chamber, is this going to make more likely for a heel babyface turn for Dolph Ziggler down the line? He wrote a pretty good, interesting article. A lot of the thoughts that he had were kind of similar to mine. He was a big fan of Swagger and the work that Swagger's doing and had done in the past. ultimately, he said that he didn't believe that this would lead to Dolph becoming a face. Like, his thing was that Dolph is a classic tweener, which I think we both agree. And he thought that anything that would lead Ziggler turning face would be more related to Randy Orton becoming heel rather than what Dolph Ziggler is doing now, which I could definitely see. If they are ultimately going to make Orton a heel, Ziggler, he might be the logical guy to make a baby face.
AJ hasn't kissed Randy Orton yet, so there's always a possibility.
There's always that, right?
Yeah.
So his thing was that, you know, he kind of acknowledged, like, you know, Ziggler and Swagger have a past, right? Have a past with each other. And he kind of thought perhaps that if they wanted to do an angle with Ziggler and Swagger, that he could have AJ go with Swagger and turn against Ziggler.
But she's Puerto Rican.
Right. So that would have been my disagreement. See, my thing is, I think what you could have set up is if you want to set up Swagger versus Dolph, you could have Swagger turn to Dolph and be like, you know, what happened to you? You know, look who you're hanging out with, a Puerto Rican chick and Biggie Langston. You know, you're not with We the People or whatever. And that would be a quick, easy way. Because, like, his thing is that I gather from what he wrote that it would be easy to flip Ziggler to a babyface by just putting him against AJ. But I think AJ can, like, she's kind of proven that she can go back and forth as a heel or a babyface as she wants. If she all of a sudden wants people to like her, if they wanted to make Dolph a babyface, all they got to do is make AJ likable again, and that'll happen immediately.
Well, do you want AJ, because you're saying this, do you want AJ to be a babyface with Ziggler as a babyface? I mean, don't you think her being with Ziggler kind of takes away from any title run that he has? Yeah, I mean, because the whole thing is, it's just like you had Macho Man, right? And the one knock against Macho Man was that a lot of people say, well, Macho Man needed Elizabeth. And when Elizabeth wasn't there, kind of the heat, any type of heat that he had wasn't there. And of course, people like me and you were like, well, that's crap because Macho Man's. anytime you have a spot where he gets in a fight, anytime you have a spot, your spot is to get in a fight with a guy with a fan outside, mm-hmm. you know, next to the fence and have the guy, like, hit you from the back. That to me, that's a great wrestler. But I kind of don't want to see Ziggler with AJ or with Big E Langston as I want to see what he can do with the ball. I want to see him be by himself and see what he can do.
Well, I think that he could be fine with AJ. I don't think he could make a babyface run and still have Big E around. Okay, so I think if they went babyface run with him, they could do it successfully with AJ there. I think it'd be cool. I think what would probably be really good was if they give him a belt and AJ the Divas title at the same time. I think that would be kind of an interesting pairing where you could have like a power couple like that that actually both have belts. But no, you're right. You can't. It takes away from his underdog status if he's got Big E Langston hanging around the corner. But I think with him as a babyface, having AJ there, if you give him some of those Macho Man spots where he loses matches because he's kind of protecting the honor, like that kind of helps. That kind of helps build Dolph as a babyface too. See, I think it's very easy to. I think AJ is one of the most pliable characters.
Well, you're always saying that Ziggler's your guy. You know, he's your guy. He's your guy. This is your guy, right? But do you want him to? I'm asking you as the biggest Ziggler support since day one. Do you want Ziggler to be put in that position where he's protecting AJ's honor and that's going to help him further on his career? I mean, do you want to see that? I mean, how do you want to see his career to be?
I would like to see him take like a career path like a Jericho, right? Where he's a small guy, he's an underdog. You know, obviously they've been dragging it out forever for him to get his belt.
You really want to see him have a career path like Jericho? I mean, Jericho had like 2 years. If not even that, he probably had 6 months of him being like a champion. How many champions has he been? He was undisputed champion.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Did he win a world heavyweight championship after that?
Probably 5 or 6, I'm pretty sure. He had a lot of world title runs. And then he was able to reinvent himself all these times and come back and win the belt. And that's whenever he come back.
Do you want to see Ziggler with what Chris Jericho's doing right now? I just have a problem with you saying that you want to have the same. I mean, Jericho's fine. I mean, but Jericho's more. If you ask me, and Ziggler is my guy, how would you want him to be? I would think like I would rather have him more of a career path of say like a
Shawn Michaels,
CM Punk. You know, even like a Rock. You know, the guys that are on top of their game can steer certain storylines. I mean, I just don't see Jericho as that.
I disagree with that. I mean, Jericho, Shawn Michaels.
You put Jericho in the same league as Shawn Michaels. Jericho is just as good as a champion as Shawn Michaels was.
So I wasn't watching WWE when Shawn Michaels had his big run, right? So for that, it'd be hard to say.
Okay, so as someone standing on, if you're standing on the street and I went up to you and I said, okay, who has a better career, Shawn Michaels or Chris Jericho?
Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
Right.
So are you saying, but you can't say that Chris Jericho has the same thing as Shawn Michaels.
I can't say, okay.
So you want to fight right now?
If you look and you're comparing like stats to stats, you know, you can't say that Chris Jericho had a better. It'd be hard to say Chris Jericho had a better career than Shawn Michaels. But in terms of the performers that they are, I can tell you that I enjoy watching Chris Jericho more than I enjoy watching Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
And that's taking nothing away from Shawn Michaels. I think Shawn Michaels is great.
So are you happy? Okay, so are you happy?
What I'm saying is this, okay? Like, his career path could go the direction of either one of those guys as small guys that got to the top because of their ability. Right, so whether on the low end, if on the low end his career is as good as Jericho's, and on the high end it's as good as Shawn Michaels or anywhere in between that, I would be okay with, because Jericho won belt after belt after belt, and Jericho always stayed relevant, and that's the thing that I really like about Chris Jericho, even as a heel, like when there wasn't many heels getting over, he would get the belt for 6 months at a time. And he'd go. Sometimes he would run away. Sometimes he'd win matches. But he was relevant for a long time in a lot of different ways.
So he's won the World Heavyweight Championship 3 times. He's won the WCW World Championship 2 times. And he was undisputed. And he has a bunch of European. I mean, he's won a lot Intercontinental Championships.
Nine times.
Okay. All right. I can get with that.
That's and then a few pretty good tag team runs as well with Big Show and you know, short lived with Christian, I believe it was. But
I would much rather see Ziggler kind of take on. I would be a lot happier. Chris Jericho's fine. I just, I just don't see any time that Jericho had the belt where, like, take, you had, like, CM Punk having the belt, right? And CM Punk, when he had the belt, when he won the belts earlier before he won the WWE one, he was kind of like the secondary guy, or even like the tertiary guy.
Right.
You know, I don't see any point in time where when Jericho had any type of championship belt where he was in the same class as like a CM Punk in terms of importance to the company. The Undisputed Championship, it was like you're sitting there and you're kind of watching it, and seeing how I have read Jericho's books and kind of with the way that people saw him, it was like, to me, Jericho's reigns as champion, like his first couple ones, it was like Chris Benoit. You know, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero saying, okay, hey, you know what? You guys have been busting your ass for so long. It's time for you guys to have the belt. You know, it's like you guys have earned your spot to have that belt. I don't want Ziggler to be that type of guy where it's like, okay, Ziggler,
okay,
it's time for your belt.
I understand that, and yeah, I don't want that. But I think that the barrier's been broken down already. Right? I don't think there's a stigma against Dolph Ziggler as being the guy that just has to work for 10 years before he gets a shot. I don't think that stigma exists so much in WWE anymore. So from the time that like it became fully recognized, you know, like I'm like excluding Jericho's WCW run in this, right? From the time that people recognize that Jericho is a top-of-the-line performer and then forward on his career, the guy was always around the top. And I think that Ziggler can pick up there. You know, can he be Shawn Michaels? You know, I guess potentially he could be Shawn Michaels. I don't think he's as good on the microphone as Shawn Michaels by any means, though he's been getting a lot better. But I do think somewhere between those two guys, I think is a pretty fair path to lay out for Dolph Ziggler.
Well, the one thing I want to say and close it off, because so we can do something else, and it's funny we're talking about your guy, but everyone's going to close it when I know you want to say stuff. Jericho, Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, all these guys, their work spoke for themselves. They were a wrestling fan's wrestling fan, you know, and when they won the belts, it was like, good, it's finally, like, what we were saying all along has been vindicated, or whatever the word I'm trying to say. It's like, it's been what we've been saying this whole time, because I used to talk to you about Benoit all the time. I'm like, you know, Benoit's my favorite. Benoit's the guy. And when he won the belt, it's like, okay, finally. It's like, finally, like, me watching this guy for such a long time, he finally gets his due. Mm-hmm. I would much rather see, for me personally, and that's why I see Jericho, too. I love Jericho. You love Jericho, but to be a Jericho fan, you have to know that this guy's going to do jobs for people. He's a jobber right now, and we're okay with that. Mm-hmm. And that's what a Jericho fan is. I just can't see an up-and-comer that you really like, that you've been following for about 2-3 years or since the beginning, or even when he was with Spirit Squad or whatever it was.
I can't claim that, but
you know what I'm saying? I just don't see you as a wrestling fan. Like, I don't want to say, like, you know, if you're asking me, like, well, where do you want to see Chris Benoit's career? Like, well, I want him to have a title run where, I'm not saying that this is what you said, but an effect you did when you're talking about having a career like Jericho, having a career like Jericho is that, you know, there's going to be a lot of negative things that happens to your wrestler in order to do the job for the business. Now, if you're that type of wrestling fan where you like guys that do things right by the business, then by all means, that's fine. I would much rather see a wrestler that I like take Sandow, right? Mm-hmm. I want to see Sandow become one of the top heel. I want Sandow to follow a career path, say, like Triple H. You know, not the type of wrestler that Triple H was, but he was always a legitimate heel champion. That's what I want to see at Triple H. I wouldn't say I want him to kind of have a career like, to have a career like Scott Hall. You know, people love Scott Hall.
Wish that on anyone at this point.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Yeah, yeah. You know, the type of career that Scott Hall had was a guy that was good seller, which Sandow's a great seller, mm-hmm. good storyteller in the ring, great gimmick, but never won anything. But had a ton of fans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where is he now in terms of when you look at legacy of wrestling? To me, Ziggler, if you can put Ziggler up there with Shawn Michaels as compared to Chris Jericho, I would shoot for Shawn Michaels instead of Chris Jericho.
Yeah, obviously. But I don't know that that's possible. I mean, Shawn Michaels is...
Well, you had to be a prick to get where Shawn Michaels was, you know?
Well, there's that. And then, I mean, you know, most people will probably say Shawn Michaels is the greatest of all time. Right, so I'm not going to come out and say Dolph Ziggler is going to end up being the greatest of all time.
I wasn't asking what he was going to be. I was asking what do you want him to be as a fan.
Right, well, I mean, I'm kind of...
Wouldn't you want Ziggler to be the greatest of all time or not?
Or do you have... It's never really crossed my mind because I know that's not what's going to happen. But in terms of like,
because John Cena is going to be the greatest of all time.
Yeah,
of course. He's a Bruno Sammartino of his generation,
yeah, pretty much. No, but it's, but just like I'll try to close it up here. I mean, I think, and kind of go back to the original question. I mean, I think Ziggler would be great as a babyface, especially if the Shield is going to be entrenched as this heel group now. I mean, he's a guy that could get a lot of traction going against them, getting his ass beat, and then finally coming through and winning a big belt, right? So I could see him taking that either, you know, because Jericho didn't really win until he became a face. And Shawn Michaels, you know, he won as a heel, obviously, but even on Shawn Michaels' path, you know, smaller guys that have to have a long road to climb before they get that title. But I think that he could, and had really good runs as baby faces and heels. And I think Ziggler has the ability to go both directions. I think that George is right. The fact that he's a tweener kind of hurts him. And we've talked about this before. Like, McMahon likes heels or faces. He doesn't like the gray, right? So he's going to be stuck as a tweener as long as they're trying to push him as a heel. But if they commit to making him a babyface, he could be easily the top three most popular guy that they have in the company.
But then he has the freedom to be a heel when he becomes a heel.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's how I would wrap that one up. And you know, that's kind of my feel for Ziggler right there. No segue on this one, sorry.
Let's go to the bottom one. I mean, let's go to, because the one you kind of have up on top, those are fine. Those are nice little window dressings. But let's talk about something that actually is going on.
Okay.
And go ahead from there. Because you're talking about a tweener. And we're going to talk about the best tweener of all time that actually could do whatever the hell he wanted to do and just be himself. Mm-hmm. And now when he tries to toe the company line by becoming a face or by becoming a heel, it doesn't work. Nothing works for this guy anymore, you know, except for the role that he's in. And it's very sad to see. And the guy that we're talking about, of course, is The Rock. And we've touched about this a little bit before. I might have him come out and say, well, The Rock is done. He really doesn't do anything for me anymore. Mm-hmm. But The Rock is who he is. This is why I like The Rock, because I like watching him in the movies. You know, and I'm going to be dead serious about that. But the whole thing, whenever I look at The Rock, I just see wasted potential. Because this was a guy when he was corporate champion, when he was the people's champion, he directed wherever he wanted to go, and he was original, he was fresh, and he didn't have to toe the company line. And I've seen him become a heel when people didn't want him to become a heel. He has successes here and there. I've seen him with the way he is now as the company man now. He has successes here and there in terms of what he does on the mic, but it will never harken back to the time of what he was before. And the reason why I bring this up is because, and I'm going to set you up, is why. Why are we talking about this now?
I've just been online reading a lot of comments about just the direction of wrestling, and there's a lot of legitimate internet hate on The Rock right now. Like, people, a lot of it has to do with the great run that CM Punk has had. This is, a lot of people are really invested, and most of the people that feel this way, I think, are CM Punk fans. They've been very invested in what CM Punk's done, and he's had a great, great run. But they've turned that to, you know, generally I always saw as, like, you got CM Punk on one side of the spectrum, and the polar opposite was John Cena. And now it seems that everyone's turned that hate from that they had on Cena towards the machine that is The Rock now. And they've kind of forgotten. See, the thing is, like, I want to say they've forgotten, but I think there's a lot of these younger fans, I don't think they saw The Rock do what he did when he was at the top of his game. And, like, I still remember that. I can't ever hate The Rock. Partly because at the time when he was at his best, he was the best thing going, right?
So he was the best in the world.
Right. And now, this next generation, why I can completely understand why they feel this hatred towards The Rock, because he is now the establishment that they're trying to work against. They don't understand that Rock was CM Punk 10 years ago, right? Rock was CM Punk.
Like, Rock invented that whole thing.
Yeah.
And I never felt that The Rock has ever got his due. And you're right. It's like, when I'm watching The Rock, I don't sit and go like, oh, I hate The Rock, I hate The Rock. It's more kind of a thing where if I had a beer, an open beer, I'd pour it on the ground, you know, just a little bit, just to kind of say, like, okay, you know, it's always kind of like, well, it could always be better because I remember the way it was before. The Rock never really got his due. Even when he was having that great heel push, when he was having a great face run, they always said, well, he's sloppy in the ring. He doesn't put on good matches, and Stone Cold Steve Austin is way better.
Right.
So he's always kind of been the secondary guy. But when I talk about secondary guy, it's like these guys are so high. They're so above and beyond mm-hmm. everybody else. Him being like one peg lower than Stone Cold was huge, but it was it's not really a detriment to the way The Rock was. Mm-hmm. You're right. I wish people could see the way he was before, because then they could get away with him trying to do it. This guy comes in cold turkey all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have a pulse on the business. He doesn't have a pulse on what the internet or the internet fan or the wrestling fan knows. And it's funny, I think Cliff Compton, who's a wrestler for, you know, I'm lucky enough for him to follow me.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, all you guys that hate internet, you know, all you guys on haters on internet that don't like wrestling, it's like, stop watching.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what we take with a grain of salt. We talk a lot of shit about John Cena, I think because it has to. But you're right. I think us seeing what The Rock did before and just this, all you need to go, I wish they would come out with a corporate champion DVD on The Rock. Mm-hmm. Because that is textbook heel. This is how you become a heel. This is how you, you know, even when he did his Nation run, from the Nation onto the corporation.
Yeah.
That span of wrestling, you will not have any, and I'm talking all, that is the best all time, ever, performance by a wrestler of all time. There's nobody better than that.
Better than this last year and a half of Punk?
By far. No, what The Rock was doing on the mic, what he was doing in the ring, everything he did, and I'm not just talking about Cena, I'm talking about Ric Flair with the Four Horsemen. Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen, to me, is the best wrestling ever.
Right.
But what The Rock did in that span of 2 years, even when he started becoming face in the 3 years, mm-hmm. It was must-see TV. The guy was just, everything that he was coming out with on the mic was working. You know, when It Doesn't Matter first came out, that was crazy. When he would walk down the rink and say, I'm going to make some guy, you know, some idiot look like an idiot on national TV, and then he does it to the guy. He had the best 2-3 run of any wrestler.
When he was throwing t-shirts on Michael Cole's face.
Yeah,
the back.
Yeah, you couldn't beat that, you know, yeah. And that's why I think we kind of, you know, we kind of get what's going on. If you want to talk bad about The Rock, go ahead. But if you're talking about The Rock and you think you're an internet smart guy and no wrestling, you have no flipping clue. It's okay to say, I don't like what The Rock is doing. But don't, to me, it's like, oh, The Rock sucks. This, that, and the Rock doesn't suck, dude.
Yeah. All right, this would be my question based off something like you kind of said earlier. So I might be going semantics here. But with the Rock, you're saying, like, he's a company man now. Are you... Now, my question to you is, is he a WWE company man? Or is it because he's a Rock company man? Okay, is he doing this because WWE says this is the way that it has to be for you now? Or does The Rock have to be this way because he's protecting the brand that is The Rock out in Hollywood? Like, could he come out and be a heel and have that affect his movie career?
I think what you're trying to say is you're absolutely right. He can't be a heel. He can't be who he is, because I think the WWE and the WWE brand and the Rock brand came together and said, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to make business good for you, for the WWE, you know, and you're going to make business good for me on the movies. I think it's a mutual agreement. I think it's a very smart agreement, because to tell you the truth, the Rock's movie career, he was doing a lot of movies, but there wasn't a lot of hype around his movies until you had a machine like WWE come out and start, you know, pumping him up in the box office. I think it's actually breathed second life into his movie career, you know, because his movies don't do well. You know, they do on a small level, but, you know, what movie have you ever seen of him where you're like, yeah, this movie is a classic? And it's not going to be one of those guys. He's an action star, and they're trying to make him as like Arnold Schwarzenegger for a while. But Arnold Schwarzenegger had Predator, you know. Any other action star you can talk about. Jean-Claude Van Damme had Bloodsport, you know, a movie that you would watch all the time. The Rock doesn't really have any movie that you would watch. Now, he's had good movies, but...
There's no signature movie.
His signature movie right now is The Tooth Fairy, because that's one that my girls watch all the time, you know.
I like
The Scorpion King. Don't get me wrong. I like The Scorpion King.
Yeah, I like The Scorpion. The movie I would say was I thought The Rundown was really
good. Rundown was
good.
Very good.
Rundown was a really good movie.
But do you watch it? Do you have the DVD?
No, you're right. Yeah. There's no signature. There's no Predator, there is no Total Recall.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't have the catalog.
When your head into my shoulder that one time, I'm like, get off me. 14 years old, man. Stop hiding on my shoulder. Poor little guy, man.
He doesn't have that catalog, right? But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's just my thing. It's like, I just don't know.
Here's the thing is that John Cena has that relationship with the WWE, but everybody hates John Cena, and John Cena can't do squat outside of wrestling. The Rock can't.
Yeah, well, that's the difference. Like, no one's gonna watch John Cena except for Jason. No one's gonna watch John Cena's movies, regardless, right? But The Rock, yeah, he has something outside of wrestling.
Well, yeah, Jason called me and he's like, hey, I'm like, yeah, he's like, I want to talk to you about something. I'm like, what, man? He's like, well, this has kind of been on my thought for a long time. I just can't get past it. I'm like, Jason, what's going on, man? He's like,
gas station.
Why did the gas attendant have to die? Yeah. What was the meaning of that? He's just trying to make his way pumping some unleaded gas, you know?
He didn't do anything to anybody. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I think that, again, I really... You know, we were watching wrestling at a great time, right? That 90s run when The Rock had. And the thing is, you know, people nowadays, they know The Rock because he's big. But they don't know what got him to that spot, right? And I know that it's within The Rock that if he wanted to come and... I know he still has it. If he wanted to have a run like that one, that he could, right? But I just don't know. Is it the WWE what doesn't want him to do it because they're protecting the brand that is The Rock? Or is it that The Rock doesn't want to do it because he's trying to protect his movie brand?
Well, I think...
But so. Let me finish.
No, go ahead.
I just would love for these people online that love CM Punk, that hate The Rock, to be able to see what The Rock could do if he's given the opportunity to have that role.
Here's some of the hate, where that hate's coming from. And if you really think about it, this is where it's coming from, is that The Rock represents what John Cena is.
Right.
And the whole problem is that you know that John Cena has to be there, and he's going to be there. Mm-hmm. The whole problem that everybody has with The Rock is that he's doing all the stuff that John Cena is doing, the same type of role that John Cena is doing. But once WrestleMania is over, he's done.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't like either. And that's the kind of hate that you have, is that CM Punk is in there day in and day out.
Right.
As much as I hate John Cena, he is there in day in and day out. Does it make John Cena more bearable? No. But the whole thing is...
Now there's two guys that are doing the same
thing. Yeah, two guys are doing the same thing, and it's just that question you ask. It's like, well, Rock is only here to promote his movies. And if you look at what he's doing, he's not doing them. He's here to build up certain people. I don't think they like that CM Punk is building up The Rock, you know, to... CM Punk is building up The Rock to be kind of... CM Punk is doing all this work to build The Rock, to build up John Cena. I mean, he built up John Cena. When Cena came out for this Raw and started telling his history of the WWE about, now that I've done this, I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to go over here and walk over here. And it's just like, dude, shut up. And it's like, we had that on the 5-minute intro with talking about setting this up. And you come out, you're not saying a goddamn thing except for saying, you know, John Cena's version of the WWE history. And when CM Punk comes out, he builds up CM Punk with just the stuff that he does. He built him up, you know. I don't think people like seeing CM Punk build up The Rock to be ready for the WrestleMania. I don't think they want to see them build up to face Cena to go in WrestleMania. I think what they do want to see, and this is a professional segue, if there's any chance of it being a three-way match, and if CM Punk does the job to Cena or The Rock in a three-way match, I have no problem with that. You know, because at least they're giving this guy is able, because I'm sitting there going like, this guy has busted his ass for the past 2 years, and now he's going back to the way he was before, where he is the best heel in the business, and he's going to sit sideline for you know, the main event of WrestleMania. He should be in the WrestleMania main event.
So you're advocating for the triple threat?
I guess I'm going right now and saying I'm advocating for the triple threat. The only reason why I wouldn't advocate for it is because I want CM Punk to win, and I don't think CM Punk is going to win in that triple threat. I think John Cena will, and I think John Cena is going to have his run. And it'll be interesting to see if they can build a storyline off of CM Punk again and create like a really good rivalry. Because John Cena has never had a really good rivalry, if you think about it. He's never had a big-time rival that he had to face in and face out. If CM Punk can be that rival and they trade blows back and forth, where John Cena wins some and CM Punk wins some, at least then Cena becomes watchable. That's the only way you can really save John Cena, unless you make him become a heel, or you have him win some, you have him lose some against CM Punk. Because CM Punk has been beating him the whole time.
Right.
I have no problem with CM Punk doing that. I don't want to say like, well, you know, CM Punk has beaten John Cena for the past 5 times. And then Cena has a run where he beats him five times in a row. Now it's like, okay, let him win a couple, let CM Punk win, let him go back and forth with the title.
Well, I think that's part of the beauty of the way that they built CM Punk, and I think if a lot of people were a little more objective about The Rock, I think that they might be able to see it too. But CM Punk has never lost, and he mentioned it yesterday, he has never lost to John Cena. He's never, I don't know if I can say that. He's never lost a title match to John Cena, right? And I think that by having Punk drop the belt to Rock, he can still come back in 6 months and say, John Cena, he can pull out the Macho Man card and say, John Cena, you might have won the match, but you never beat me. Ooh, yeah. Right? And he can play that card, and it's legit. And that's one of the things that CM Punk does best, is he brings the truth out that people don't like, but they really can't dispute it. So I do think that even if you set him up in this triple threat match, you know, I think that Cena will ultimately pin The Rock because they have to get even. And CM Punk can still walk out and say, I still never lost that match. Now, the thing that got me to thinking, and I think this would be a good match. I think this would be a good way to go. They don't do
the triple threat or
the triple threat. I don't think that they don't do a whole lot of triple threat main event at WrestleMania, so in that, it does make it unique. But I think another thing, it might be kind of short-sighted, but like the people that don't want to see this triple threat match is like we talked about last week. If what you're saying is really the case with The Undertaker wanting to do a job for Cena, I mean, for CM Punk, I mean, that's, to me, that's more important than a belt, right? I mean, anybody can hold a belt any amount of times, right? But there's only going to be one person that beats the streak, if that even happens.
Yeah.
And CM Punk winning that is much more, you could almost put that right on a parallel with 434, whatever the hell amount of days it was. Because those are two things that are going up on the wall that aren't ever coming
and
down.
And what does he do on the next Raw? At the Raw after WrestleMania, what does he do? You know? What does he do? John Cena comes out with the belt, and what can CM Punk do? I like that line of thinking a whole lot better.
Right. And that's what I think. Like, you know, for these people that they're so... And I can see it because, you know, the kind of dislike that we have for Cena is what is building up for a lot of people towards The Rock. Okay? But... They just see, okay, CM Punk doesn't have this belt anymore. But the way that he lost it, the way they've set him up to that, he still never lost to Cena. And if it, in fact, does lead to him defeating The Undertaker at WrestleMania, I mean, that is much bigger. That is much bigger than another title run.
Okay, so, yeah, no, I think we hit on three really good topics, and we had kind of had two other things we wanted to talk about, but we can always save it for later on. Because we've never held off any segment before. You know, whenever we said we were going to do a segment, we've always done it. And the one that always comes to mind is the kind of the Japanese wrestler that I'm looking at. My Japanese wrestler of the moment, you know, if you will. And I really wanted to bring this guy up. Oh, looks like we're out of time. But, hey, man, good job today, man. It's fun to do a podcast when things are kind of going your way, you know? Kind of like with Jumping Jeff Farmer, you know? I don't like it when things aren't. Don't go my way. And yep. That's how we were. We're like Jeff Farmer trying to do that promo, right, Kevin? Yep.
Yep. Yep. No, it's, yeah. I was, yeah, very pleased with the results this last, you know, over the weekend and obviously yesterday on Raw. And, you know, it's good. Yeah, you start getting invested and you start, like, you know, seeing all the negative possibilities, oh, they're going to screw this up, they're going to do this wrong, or they're going to bury the guy that I like, and every once in a while you get that gem, and it feels good,
It's better than saying, and you got me mad now. Motley Crue, you put a hurt on me. No, it's good though. Yeah, I don't know what else to say, but I don't want to be like, you know, we haven't even said who we are, so I have we have Better Have My Donuts over here. You can follow him on Twitter. I am the Bad News Ramen. I only speak in third person on Twitter. Give us a follow if you want. We also have JP. I think it's JP19Cat84 or something like that. And I don't even know this, but that's our producer. Just look for the guy that has the Stormtrooper helmet on his thing and give him a follow too. He usually talks about the Marine a lot, and you know he has the rundown of the gas attendant's life up to the point when he actually dies and stuff, and he's talked to me about that too, you know, with the tear in his eye and stuff and everything. So
a lump in his throat.
Yeah. It's like I have something in the back of my throat.
But hold it together.
Yeah. I can't do it, man. Not here, not now. We'll be at a family function and I'm like, hey man, I'm like, gotta get some gas. Like, no, man, no.
Don't bring that up.
I told you. So, Buddha Scale 18. I have my man, better have my dentist over here. Bad News Ramen. We'll check you out next week. And we do, you know, we'll probably talk about the match between Cena and CM Punk. See how that plays out on Raw. And anything else that does. I like kind of the build they have with Ziggler with the Money in the Bank against Del Rio. It didn't work out the way it was supposed to, but nice little spots. Nice little spots here and there. And yep. then we will talk about the return of R-Truth, you know, and because I love that guy. He's probably one of my favorite wrestlers, and see the rebirth of Kofi Kingston and R-Truth. And
that's what's up.
That's what's up. Oh, terrible. I'm going to edit that part out. Watch the Marine 86 and theaters near you. Hey, folks, Marine 86.
Straight to DVD.
Yeah,
that means I'm the premiere.
86 cast attendance dead. So, Movie Skill 18, you out?
Yeah, I think maybe the number on Jason's Twitter handle is
84.
The count. It's the count of
how many. It's not when he was born, but how many gas attendants have died
in
the Marine.
I think that's what it is.
In the Marine franchise, if you will.
Yes, I think that's exactly what it is.
All right, man, so we're out of here then, right? Good to go.
Good
to go, run you. Movie Skill 18, Movie Skill. Take drag. Rails in the place to be. Coming to get you out, kid. And we out, no doubt.